Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. It's really nice to see you here. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. If you don't know me already, my name is Margaret Ellen Horrocks, and I'm on the senior leadership team here at the church, and I am your hostess with the mostest this morning. And we're going to get started. I'm going to invite Marilla Smith up to the front. Marilla, thank you so much for speaking today. You are such a blessing to our congregation. And okay.
Good morning.
Second in a series of three, where we're addressing this big change that we're going through, with Scott retiring, Tab stepping in the interim, and then who knows? We're going to hold it loosely. When I spoke a few weeks ago, we talked about abandonment and how when there's change, that it can trigger in us some feelings of abandonment, particularly if that's been our experience in our history, that we have felt abandoned, that we have been abandoned. This might feel like another abandonment. So we talked a little bit about what do we do if we have that feeling, whether it's related to this change or whether it's related to something completely different in our lives. And so I touched on three things that we can do. We can be authentic with God and just really let him know what our feelings are. David was pretty open and authentic in his Psalms, where he cried out and he poured out his feelings of abandonment to God. So we can be authentic as well. The second is look for your helpers. So look to the community, to the other people. Who can support you in this? Who can you share your feelings with? How can we come together to support one another? And the third one is to hold our expectations loosely about what God is going to do, and just make space and give him the room to do what he's going to do. So all of these things apply to what's going on today, and then we're going to add a few more skills today. The Oxford Dictionary defines grief as a feeling of great sadness, especially when someone dies. But grief isn't only associated with death. There are a lot of different things that we can grieve in our life. We can grieve the loss of dreams, the loss of hope, the loss of opportunity, of what could have been. We can grieve the loss of different relationships. There's all kinds of levels of grief that we encounter in our life. And live long enough, and you're going to have grief. That's just the reality of the human condition. When I got married, Jeff and I didn't leave for our honeymoon for a couple of days, so the day after our wedding, we went to my mom's house to pick up our gifts, and she's there crying on the couch. I'm like, Mom, what's going on? I said, why are you crying? I'm going to be living closer to you now, because I had been living in Guelph, and now we were going to move to Orangeville, like not far. I said, you're probably going to see me more. You know, what is going on here? And she said, but you're not mine anymore. This was the change. There were good things that were happening because, you know, I was going to live closer and we were going to see each other more. But there was also this change and this loss that my mom felt. I thought she was a little bit bananas, but now I have two daughters that are getting married. Yes, two. So we have Karina and Tate, who got engaged a couple weeks ago. So yeah, congratulations to you guys. But now I also feel that. I'm so happy that they're getting married and they're moving to this next stage of their life. And there's part of me that's going to feel the loss, that's going to feel the change. But I think a bigger part of me is happy, so we're good. So last time we were talking about David, King David, or rather David before he was king. And we're going to come back to David. And when we last left David, it was at the end of 1 Samuel. And he had been running from King Saul for a few years. We don't know exactly how many years, but to him, it probably felt like forever, being chased by Saul. And so Saul has died, and now here we are. So let's go to 2 Samuel 1. I'm going to read 2 to 17. You can follow along on your phones, or you can just listen. It says, on the third day, a man arrived from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and with dust on his head. When he came to David, he fell to the ground to pay him honor. "Where have you come from?" David asked him. He answered, "I've escaped from the Israelite camp." "What happened?" David asked. "Tell me." And he said, "The men fled from the battle. Many of them fell and died, and Saul, his son Jonathan, and his son Jonathan are dead." Then David said to the young man who brought him the report, "How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?" "I happened to be on Mount Gilboa," the young man said, "and there was Saul leaning on his spear with the chariots and riders almost upon him. When he turned around and saw me, he called out to me, and I said, 'What can I do?' He asked, 'Who are you?' 'An Amalekite,' I answered. Then he said to me, 'Stand over me and kill me. I'm in the throes of death, but I'm still alive.' So I stood over him and killed him, because I knew that after he'd fallen, he could not survive. And I took the crown that was on his head and the band on his arm and have brought them here to my lord." Then David and all the men with him took hold of their clothes and tore them. They mourned and wept and fasted till evening for Saul and his son Jonathan, and for the army of the Lord and the house of Israel, because they'd fallen by the sword. David said to the young man who brought him the report, "Where are you from?" "I'm the son of an alien, an Amalekite," he answered. And David asked him, "Why were you not afraid to lift your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" Then David called one of his men and said, "Go strike him down." So he struck him down and died. For David had said to him, "Your blood be on your own head. Your own mouth testified against you when you said, 'I killed the Lord's anointed.'" David took up the lament concerning Saul and his son Jonathan and ordered that the men of Judah be taught this lament of the bow. And then it goes on, this lament, which is like a poem or a song that they spoke or sang in grief. Pretty harsh stuff. But imagine the weird space that David was in at that point. So there's this king who's been chasing him for years, wanting him dead. And yet when he hears that Saul is dead, you would think he might celebrate. But he actually loved Saul. Saul was his king. Saul was someone he cared about. Saul was the father of his dearest friend. And so on the one hand, he might be feeling some relief that Saul is gone, but he's also feeling deep, deep grief. I don't know if anyone has ever experienced the same thing, where maybe you have a challenging relationship somewhere in your life with a parent, a sibling, a friend, anyone. And sometimes, let's be honest, we think my life would be easier if they weren't here. And then they're not. And we're blindsided by grief, which can be really confusing because it was such a difficult relationship, but here we are feeling this overwhelming grief. What are we grieving at those times? I think we're grieving sometimes the loss of the relationship repair or the opportunity to repair the relationship. We're grieving the loss of opportunity to have a relationship, maybe what the relationship should have been, could have been, but now there's no opportunity for that anymore. It says that David took up a lament and taught it to his men. It's a practice that we don't know very much about in the North American culture. We don't lament because we have this kind of prevailing message in our culture that in order to be happy, which they say, oh, you can be happy. It's kind of presented as the holy grail, this constant happiness. And you can do that if you have a great career, if you have the perfect relationship, if you've got the right house, the right car, the right pet, the right children. You get all that stuff in order, and man, you're gonna live this fulfilling life where you can spend all this time doing what fills your soul and have some kind of mysterious stream of passive income that's gonna fund it all. This is the dream that we're presented, but does anyone have that kind of life? Has anyone actually grasped it? I sure don't. We shy away from grief and negative emotions. We are not equipped with the skills often to deal with these negative things that we have to face in our life, and we are all going to face them. We don't know how to lament. Lament is an expression of profound sorrow. It's mourning a loss. Some synonyms for lament are bemoan, regret, moan, bewail, sob, wail, cry, bawl, weep, howl. These are some pretty powerful words. And a lady by the name of Lynn Babb, not sure how to pronounce her name, she's a PhD and an academic. She writes about grief. She's written a few books about grief. And she talks about these synonyms for lament, or these verbs. And she says, these verbs have helped me see my deep-seated, unstated, and unexamined tendency to mute all expressions of grief. I wonder how much of this tendency comes from my parents' stoicism, developed in the Depression and World War II. I wonder if some of it comes from the Nicianity we practice in Christianity or in Christian churches. And frankly, wailing, bawling, and howling are not very comfortable. All that passionate pain, too much, too hard, too disorienting. If I wail, I bawl or howl, will I get lost in those emotions and never come back? And I think that really captures kind of our North American fear of grief, our inability to sit with grief and loss, because big emotions are scary and we just don't have the skills to handle them. There's a study of 24 countries that was done, and it was a study on post-traumatic stress disorder, so PTSD. Canada was one of those countries that was studied, and we were found to have the highest rate of lifetime PTSD of all the 24 countries that were studied. So that it was 9.2% here in Canada. Now in Brazil, where there are so many more day-to-day challenges for the average citizen. So there's poverty and struggle and just a whole different lifestyle. They have an average lifetime PTSD rate of 3.2%, a third of what we have here in Canada. And why is that? When we live in a country that has access to so many things, resources and support, what's going on there? And what this study found is that the higher our expectation of safety is, the less resilient we are. Because we expect to have this cushy life. We expect to be able to follow our dreams, have a roof over our head, food, clothing, all of those things. This is our expectation here in Canada. And so when something disrupts that, it is a major impact on our own personal goals and our own belief in safety. And so we don't have the skills to handle that. And so we have the highest rate of lifetime post-traumatic stress disorder. So let's switch back to David now. So things don't necessarily get easier for David once Saul is dead. So ultimately, David gets crowned king of Judah. And one of Saul's sons gets crowned king of everything else. So now we have these two houses, the house of Saul and the house of David, and they're at war. So there's David again, caught in this really weird position where he is fighting against the brother of his best friend, the son of the king that he loved, and yet they're at war. So there was a guy named Abner, and he was the one that helped Saul's son kind of get crowned king. And so he's siding with the house of Saul until he gets accused one day of sleeping with one of Saul's concubines. And he's so offended because he's thinking, why would I give up my honor and everything for this woman? And I haven't even done it. And here you are blaming me. So that's it. He's done, basically, with the house of Saul, he switches his allegiance to the house of David. And so he contacts David and he says, hey, listen, I can help you get all of Israel. You can become the king of Israel. And David says, great, I'll take that offer. But here's the thing, don't come into my presence unless you bring me my first wife, Michal. If you remember, David had married Michal, but then as he was on the run, Saul went and married her off to somebody else. Those days, she didn't have a choice. She had to go and do what her dad said. So Abner says, no problem. He starts working behind the scenes and he gets the elders of Israel and he gets the house of Benjamin on his side. And then he says, okay, we're good. So he heads out, grabs Michal, heads out, goes to see David. David puts on this big feast. They have their meeting. They talk shop. Everything's good. David sends him off. David sends Abner off in peace. Then one of his warriors, Joab, comes back with his men. They'd been out on a raid. And he says, what? How could you let Abner come here? Abner, he was only spying on you. So just as an aside, Abner had killed Joab's brother in an earlier battle. Joab was after him, but after some negotiation, they decided to stop the bloodshed. And so they just put a pin in that for a little while. So Joab knows that Abner's come to see David. So he sends his men out against David's wishes. And he calls Abner back. And what does Joab do? Stabs him in the gut. Kills him. As avenging his brother's death. And also probably thinking that he is protecting David because he believes that Abner was a spy. But here's what happened. So David is furious because he has sent Abner off in peace. They had an agreement. And now Joab has come and he's killed essentially an innocent man. So he curses Joab with an STD, just as an aside. He calls his curse down on him. There's some really strange things that happen in the Bible. But anyway, then David said to Joab and all the people with him, tear your clothes and put on sackcloth and walk in mourning in front of Abner. Sorry, this is in 2 Samuel 3. We're at verse 31. Tear your clothes and put on sackcloth and walk in mourning in front of Abner. King David himself walked behind the bier, which is where they would hold the dead body or the ashes of the cremated. They buried Abner in Hebron, and the king wept aloud at Abner's tomb. All the people wept also. And the king sang this lament for Abner. Should Abner have died as the lawless die? Your hands were not bound. Your feet were not fettered. You fell as one falls before wicked men. And all the people wept over him again. So David is again grieving this loss of this innocent man. But it doesn't end there. So at this point, there are these two men who are part of the house of Benjamin. And the house of Benjamin originally was aligned with the house of Saul. Now, because of Abner's dealings, they are now aligned with the house of David. So they think they're going to do a great thing. They kind of use their status as formerly house of Saul. And so they make their way into Saul's son's home. Saul's son's name, I think, Ish-bosheth. I don't know how to say these names. But they weasel their way in, kill him in his own bed, behead him, take his head to David. Again, David is like, what have you done? So let's read chapter 4, verses 9. We'll start there. David answered Rechab and his brother Baana, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite. As surely as the Lord lives, who has delivered me out of all trouble, when a man told me Saul is dead and thought he was bringing good news, I seized him and put him to death in Ziklag. That was the reward I gave him for his news. How much more when wicked men have killed an innocent man in his own house and on his own bed, should I not now demand his blood from your hand and rid the earth of you? So again, these two guys are thinking that they're doing David a favor. They're kind of hastening his kingship over Israel. But Israel's like, no, this was an innocent man. Again, the son of the king he loved, the brother of the friend he loved. So again, all of those mixed feelings happening with this grief. And so what does he do? He has these two guys killed and takes the head and buries it with Abner. So you'd think maybe that once Saul was dead and he was the king of the house of Judah, things would have relaxed for him. But no, David kept having all these difficulties, all this grief come up. So what can we learn about grief from David's grief? Well, we talked about the lament. So David himself lamented. We see him tearing his clothes, weeping, following behind the death briar of Abner and lamenting. But then he also called people into communal lament. He called his soldiers. He called the community. He taught them the lament after Saul and Jonathan had been killed. We see the lament. We talked a little bit about it the last time I spoke in the Psalms where, you know, David is pouring out his heart. He's like, God, where are you? Why am I coming up against all this difficulty? And really pouring out his heart, pouring out his grief. And for those of us, for all of us, when we face our grief and loss, lament is a gift that we can use to help us process. At the very least, we have lament here in our Bible. We have Psalms of Lament. We have a whole book called Lamentations, all about grief. And we can borrow the words of the psalmist and the writers to help express our own grief. We can also form our own lament. So there's empirical proof, scientific proof that writing, journaling can help us process. It can help us to process our grief, our trauma, and really lessen the impact of those events over time. So we see David was a writer. He wrote lots of Psalms. There are a whole bunch of other Psalms. I don't know who wrote those, but they're also in there. And there's lament and there's all sorts of feelings in there. So to write our own lament, there are four steps. So the first is to address God. Second step is to share our complaint, to share our pain, to be authentic with our feelings. The third step is we ask God for what we need. And the fourth, and this is a very important piece, we end with an expression of trust. One of the reasons that lament can be so powerful is because it takes us through our pain and circles us back around to the truth of who God is and what he can offer us. A lament is a prayer, and desperate, pain-filled prayers are just as important to our relationship with the Father as the thanksgiving and the praise and the praying for other people. We can't have intimacy without authenticity and vulnerability. That is true in our human relationships. It is true in our relationships with our Heavenly Father. If we're holding things back, He doesn't have the permission then to move into those areas. Lament allows us to be authentic in the presence of the Father and just circles us, like I said, circles us back around to the truth that our Father is our source of comfort. Mark 5:4 says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Anyone else think that's like just on the surface of it, that's kind of weird? Blessed are those who mourn. I don't know if you've ever mourned. Well, we've all been sad. Do we feel blessed at that time? Not necessarily. So what does this mean? Well, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. If people don't know we're mourning, they can't comfort us. And so the outward expression of our grief invites those around us to come and offer comfort. The outward expression of our grief opens us up to the comfort of the Holy Spirit. If we keep our feelings inside, never letting those around us know that we're in pain, that we're grieving, that we've felt loss, how can they comfort us? How can they walk alongside us? If writing your own lament just doesn't seem available to you, like I said, borrow the words in the Bible, the other writers who have so beautifully and authentically expressed their grief. The second thing that we can see in David's process of grief and mourning is ceremony. Ceremony is an important way to process grief because it gives us a time and a place to express our thoughts and our feelings. We have some ceremonies around death here in North America. We have funerals, we have celebrations of life, but not a lot of ceremony around other types of loss. I never understood, you know, we have this weird thing in North America. I don't know if it's anywhere else, but we don't tell, women don't often tell people they're pregnant for the first 3 months. Why? In case they lose the baby. Isn't that precisely why we should tell people? Because if we do lose the baby, there's grief, there's loss, there's mourning, but we hide that because, you know, other people might not be comfortable knowing that. But that is precisely why I believe, and I never held to that rule, but you'll find that I don't hold to a lot of rules, but I let people know right away because, quite honestly, all of my pregnancies were a shock and I needed some support. See, Lori sitting back there, and she remembers the day I told her that Eli was on the way because we had a very long walk and a very long talk and lots of tears and lots of words. But I needed her. Jeff was gone on a business trip. So, you know, I wasn't going to do it over the phone. So I needed my friend, and she walked along beside me. And so we need that. On August 17th, we're having the retirement party for Scott. That is a ceremony. That is a moment that marks a change when we're changing over. And so I'd encourage you to be there as a time to just sort of celebrate what was and move together into what will be. Now, it's probably going to be an event with a lot of mixed feelings. We'll be happy to bless Scott into his retirement and to bless Scott and April into this next stage of life. And we might feel the loss of what was. Things are going to be different. We love Tab, and things are going to be different. And that can be a little difficult and a little destabilizing for some people. So there will be joy because we're all together. There will be sadness that we're saying goodbye, and there's going to be joy because there's food. We love our food. Last summer, some of us had to say goodbye to a dear friend of ours from the Guelph Vineyard who we all loved. And so when we went to her celebration of life, it was exactly one of these mixed feeling kinds of events because we were so sad to have lost her. And, you know, we were mourning with her family at their loss. And yet, we got to see a whole bunch of people we hadn't seen in years, people who had walked alongside us in our early years of marriage. And, you know, we had the joy of catching up with people and then the sorrow. So it's kind of like, it's a little bit like this. Oh, hey, how are you? So nice to see. How are the kids? Oh, it's so, I know it's so hard that we lost her, but hey, I just saw on Facebook that you did this, you know, and it's like this ping pong. Right? It's going between grief and some joy, and it's just a weird place to be. And that's okay. The older I get, the more of these, you know, funerals or celebrations of life that I go to, the more comfortable I get with this really weird space of grief and joy and all this stuff that's mixed up. Ceremony can be as elaborate as a funeral, as a wedding. That's a celebration. You know, it can be as simple as lighting a candle, as writing a card or a letter, a special action that you take to mark a moment, like a retirement party, like communion, where we come together and remember Jesus's life and death. And the remembrance of his death and the brutality of his death can be weighty, can be heavy. I remember watching The Passion of the Christ for the first time. Oh, that just really kind of brings it home how brutal the death was. And yet we have the hope and the joy of resurrection. And so even communion, even that time can be a time of mixed emotions, and that's okay. It's okay. We don't have to claim just one and say, I'm happy today, or I'm sad today. We can move and be fluid, and that's okay. As we move through this stage of change with all its unknowns and its big feelings, let's remember the gifts of lament and ceremony, two gifts that we have been given to help us walk through our grief, along with the gift of the Holy Spirit, who is our comforter, a community that we can draw on for support, and ultimately a Father that loves us and will not leave us in despair and grief. So I just want to finish off today again with the same psalm that I finished off the last time. And if the band wants to come up while I'm doing this. So I just invite you to get comfortable. Close your eyes if it's comfortable, or just find a place to rest your eyes and soften your gaze and just open to hear these words from David. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, O Lord, my God, give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. My enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for he has been good to me. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for he has been good to me. Let's sing.